The Gambling Files podcast presents Desert Island Discs with your host, John Bruford. Welcome back to another episode, I don't even know what number episode this is, of Desert Island Discs, aka The Gambling Files presents Desert Island Discs. I'm your host for this adventure into fuck knows what, John Bruford. And our guest today is Mr. Earl G. Hall. Earl, welcome.
Really stressful, terrifying, and fun to be here.
Woohoo! I've got, what does the G stand for?
Oh, I shouldn't Godfather. Tell that one. I shouldn't tell that one public. But when you come from the tropical island of Newfoundland in Canada, like I do,
does look nice.
And you've been terrorized by the Catholic Church for hundreds of years, everybody gets these names of saints and they roll them out like a factory. So like there's 600 Anthonys, there's 600 of this. Well, I was in the factory lot of Gerard. But the cool thing is the reason why I put the G into my name, because up until 1996, I never used the G in my name. But when I got out of the army, I ended up in Quebec City. And I was at this Microsoft training and consulting company. And this person used to always call the employees over an intercom. And the person used to pronounce my name with a very thick French accent. And I was growing uncomfortable over time being announced with 500-600 people in the building, being announced as Pearl All, because I understood it and I got a kick out of it for the first few times, but apparently a lot of people in Quebec City understand English and everybody knew that my name translated was throw everything up. So I tried to put the G in there to give a break between the first name, the second name, to break up the phonetics. It didn't work. It only made it worse. And I will not say online what it turned into being pronounced with the G there. But it went from out of the pot and into the fire.
I see.
It spiraled from there. So I just kept it. And I just chuckle every time when I think of what I was actually called as of the day I became Orgy Hall.
Nice. I've had some stupendous nicknames, so I feel your pain.
It's been a strange life so far. I'm excited to read the book and watch the movie.
I hear you. So, For our listeners, our guests are pre-warned about what we're going to ask because, you know, we're asking things from history where, you know. So our guests are stranded on a tropical island. They are allowed to choose three albums, three books, three movies, one song, not on the albums, one pet, one object, one dessert, and two pieces of advice to keep them company in this tropical paradise. All their basic needs are taken care of. There is abundant water. There are goat butlers. There is shelter and probably a fire. So all the basics are good. They're just a bit bored. What do they want with them? So we're going to kick off with probably your most difficult subject. We're going to start with albums. What's your first album?
Easy. Journey.
So wait, Journey is that, really only had one album. Self-titled album?
Well, they only really had one album, but you could call it their greatest hits because they basically ported over all of their songs on that initial album to their greatest hits. It's a red cover with like a big eagle on it. Eagle-ish thing.
So there's a song that Journey's really famous for, isn't there?
Well, in my world, there's two. There's the one that you get all emotional about, which is called Faithfully. And they have another one as well that a buddy of mine, Paula Mahundro, and I made a point of making every single band in the world play wherever we were, from the Philippines to Mexico. We would take over the band. I remember trying to explain it to a band in Thailand once that they had to play the song from Journey. They figured it out, paid them enough money for them to figure it out. But Journey is definitely number one.
Don't Stop Believing. I just had to look it up.
That's what it is.
Of course it is. Of course.
That song carried me through the deepest, darkest moments in history. My history.
Wait, do you know what? You're probably not alone in that.
Because, well, I tell you one thing. We used to get a hell of a reaction when I flipped the amount of money it took to take over the band.
But there's a reason that songs like that endure. Because they hit, no pun intended, they strike a chord in people.
Yep.
And sometimes they're treated as, in a derisory way, they're sometimes treated as being a bit cheesy, this, that, and the other. But they still endure.
Well, if you look at Don't Stop Believing, it really bridges the gap between hope and faith. When you don't have hope anymore, you need faith. When your faith gets strong enough, you get enough hope. And that's just like a dog chasing its tail, a tail. So I think that song really sits in the middle of that. You need something to hang on to when you have nothing to hang on to, I guess.
So how old were you when you were listening to Journey by Journey?
The very first week it came out. So that was like 80s, like... Let's just say before Factions, if that's cool.
Okay. So this, I was just going to try and place where you would be then. And I realized I would be guessing your age, and you are quite clearly an evergreen.
Okay. I just told I was Gen X. That was real cool because, like, I'm the most anti-baby boomer person on the planet. So when I figured out I was a Gen X, at least, you know, that's a cool letter.
Yeah, totally. That's the way that I do it as well. And I've tried doing Z, but it's like, I mean, it looks like
that's
a bad.
That's kind of like a back over the toe hold. That one doesn't work for me either.
It's not right. Do you know what I mean? And then you kind of do Y like that, but you're essentially just doing X again. Gen X is where it's at.
You should try it when you're not sober. Apparently, the body is a lot more negotiable when you're drunk. They tell me.
Sadly, those days are behind me.
Me too. I'm sitting in the passenger seat with you.
It's for the best.
Health wise, different world. Friends wise, fun wise, different world.
Yeah, I do hear you. So, what you said that was like this sitting in this, or Don't Stop Believing was sitting in this space between hope and faith. But I mean, was that what this album meant to you when you were youngish?
Oh yeah. Well, if you put that album in perspective, I was in my teens, late teens, had a rough childhood in the sense that, got beaten and bullied a lot, didn't fit in. And I talk about this openly now because one of my big goals in life was to get this out in a structured way. And when I did a TEDx, it was part of explaining the path to purpose. But that song there, that one song on that album, and then the whole album caught on after that. But really, Don't Stop Believing was a way for me to just make it to the next day, make it to the next day till I could figure out how to escape the island, literally.
Okay. What's your second album?
Even Crazier Story. Super
You're
track.
In the right place.
The one with the lady with her waitress dress on.
Supertramp, Christ. I'm gonna have to look this up. Okay, so it's not the first one.
No. not. I was maybe bored. And like I said, I'm a visual person. So there's a lot of words that I don't store in my brain because it's like, don't have enough space, maybe. But I remember the album covers. She's wearing yellow, black trim, white. Anyway.
I'm looking it up and I'm listening.
Well, I can too, you know, but I can't type and talk. So,
so what period was this for you? And what did this album sort of
same
mean
period?
For you?
I can nail that one down to an actual
Breakfast
date.
In America.
There you go. So yeah, I'm looking at it right now. So yeah, there's the lady in yellow. So I can nail that one down to almost a hardcore day and date. It's so crazy.
Bring it.
So that album, I went, as the story goes, I hope that my sister will hear this because that was an imitation of a joke that we do. But as the story goes, I was in primary school into the Christian nuns. Story to itself. Then I went to the Christian Brothers. And if you ever Google Newfoundland Irish Christian Brothers, interesting. So that album, we were brought out one time to I guess in today's world, it'd be called a meditation retreat. It was really, I don't know, part of the curriculum or whatever they were doing back then. And one of the Christian Brothers who became like probably the most iconic figure in my entire life and not inside of the norm of the model or the dogma of those Christian Brothers in Newfoundland. This guy was hardcore Supertramp, and the whole retreat, which was like a couple of days, he played this whole album. So that album, like for me, music, like they're micro notes, because micro is sound, macro is light. Basically the same thing on different spectrums.
Okay.
So what this music was actually doing with the work that he was trying to get us to do by doing diaries and all these crazy things that from Newfoundland was like way out of the box for us at that time in history. That album actually coded in my path to the light. In other words, I figured out it with that album and the songs that were playing that I had to get out of Newfoundland. And one of the craziest results was when I came out of that retreat, I figured the way out was to become a Christian brother. So I did all my applications and, oh yeah. So did all the applications, filled out the form, wrote the essay, did all the works, put in the envelope, put the address on it, walked up to Brother Griffin. He said, Brother Griffin, I need you to hand this in to whoever the guy is with the tall hat that does your recruitment. He sat me down and looked at me, and you have to understand, this guy was iconic. Didn't even open it, didn't look at it, understood what it was, and went and ripped it up. And he goes, you have a different path to follow, and you will follow that path.
Well, that could have gone a lot worse.
Can you imagine me as a Christian brother? Oh, my God.
Well, the way that you said Irish Christian Brothers in Newfoundland, it got me thinking, you know, the stories of the Magdalene sisters in Ireland and all of the fucking abuse and everything that came out of that.
Yep. Keep going.
I mean, that's
you're there. You're there.
That's where my head goes with those things. And it's nearly always the right place.
Yeah. There's a backstory to that, as you can imagine. That was pun intended, by the way. I really lucked out with those guys, though. There was a little bit of abuse in terms of physical abuse, but nothing to create like hardcore permanent scars. But there was a couple of those guys that were godsends, not to make a joke. And Brother Griffin was really the guy that showed up as a guardian angel. And however he got me on the right path to finding the Royal Military College, to being recruited to the Canadian Army, to going off to get a great education, and being where I am today, well, that one's all on him because he was the one holding the steering wheel and opening the doors. So a lot of eternal gratitude for that guy. And it all started off with that album Supertramp that I was really uncomfortable listening with in the beginning because the way the music is arranged was not normal for the 80s because it was expressing all the pain, shame, guilt, and everything else that was oppressed from the 70s.
They're an unusual band for sure.
They're an unusual band, but because the experience was coded with the music, it stuck with me forever.
Were you ever able to tell him what that moment was for you? Were you ever able to just sort of almost say thank you?
Not to the level that I've been able to, and I keep tabs on him, and I mention it every time I do something public. But I've never been able to fly face to face to have a conversation with him.
Just thought I'd ask.
Hey man, the world works in mysterious ways. Thank you for the nudge.
Really,
I'm not getting any younger. Apparently,
I wouldn't have thought he is either.
Nope.
Okay, brings us to album number three.
Album number three is going to get a little bit complex. And
it's been so straightforward so far.
Album number three is going to take us way on the other spectrum of the cowboy boot world, and it's going to be Vince Gill.
Okay.
Yeah.
That is a bit of a jump.
It is a bit of a jump. And I am a not publicly renowned guitar player. I come from a very musical family. And this guy, and I'm just looking there. No, it's not that one. So I'm trying to find the album cover because it's blue. And it's not showing up from, oh, there it is. Got it. So the name of the album is When Love Finds You.
Got it. So that was released in 94.
Yep. And 94.
Terribly cheesy cover.
Hey, it was a great haircut year. Come on. Elvis was back in style. But that one takes me to a totally different spectrum. I was on my 10th year in the Army. The Army has a way of chewing up personal relationships, has a way of chewing up families. And that album brought two things into me. And like every song on that album is like a super hit. But number one, that guy is one of the craziest, most amazing guitar players the world has ever seen.
Okay.
Number two, he loves to make all kinds of jokes because he's an incredible storyteller. I've seen him in person many times. And I like to see him in the most obscure places where there's only like 100 or 200 people in the room. Like I saw him in Eastern. I got a beautiful birthday gift from my wife. And we went to see him in a school auditorium in Eastern Pennsylvania, where like it was like we were sitting with his family and he spent the whole night telling stories. And there's one thing to sing songs. There's another thing to play guitar. But to be a very authentic and vulnerable and forthright person when you're on stage, he's just magical to be around. And he has this genuine laugh that when you hear him laugh, it's kind of like your best friend from high school. And more importantly, and I'm from Newfoundland, so we say the words of a song. We don't use the word lyrics. So the words of his songs are, I'd say, on par with any therapist you'll ever find.
Well, I'm looking for a therapist, so.
Well, Welcome to the countryside.
Maybe that's how I'll spend my evening. I'm just looking at the recording personnel on the album, and two things stand out. Amy Grant was one of the backing vocalists.
His wife?
Is Amy Grant his wife?
Yes.
Wow, well, she's a hell of a singer herself. But Alison Krauss also did backing vocals.
Oh, yeah, another one of my favorites. She's one of the best violin players out there.
But she did those wonderful albums with Robert Plant, of course, who's a local boy to where I'm sitting.
Yep. And, well, we could have went down the path of Robert Plant and those guys as well, but I only had three albums to do, so I would have headed directly in that direction right afterwards. But for me, and here's probably the secret sauce of why for albums I have trouble with the names, is when I'm having a furball moment. And a furball moment, it means in my digging down into the dark, ugly deep, I find something. It's just magical how a song will show up to stick the finger in the bullet wound, to really make all of the pain start to surface.
Yeah, I think what you're talking about is, it's one of the really interesting things about the way that we work as animals.
Yep.
Now, I've always said that a good horror movie has great sound design, because we remember with unerring accuracy how a bone breaks.
Yep.
But you can have three people each witness the same thing, and 5 minutes later, they've got three different stories. Our visual memory is terrible. Our oral memory and our emotional memory is dead on every friggin' time.
And that's because sound vibrates the limbic brain. So sound is remembered remarkably better than visual. Visual is largely erroneous. So sound for me is so important, and like I love looking at my Spotify statistics every, we're allowed to say Christmas, I guess now, are we? So that's a joke. So I just thought I'd throw that in the subtitles. So when I see my Spotify top 10 of the year, it's really a summary of what I've been working through, as my old boss in the army would say, it's what I've been working through in the shit locker all year.
That's interesting.
And my record is still one song that I played 12,000 times. Because when I'm working through something, I'll stick the song on repeat. And whether it takes a day, a week, a month, or a year,
you are getting to choose. It's fixed. You are getting to choose one song. Is that going to be the song that you choose?
Maybe.
Because we can go to that now. Okay. Well, we'll do it in the order that I read things out earlier. Do you know, we've done, how many episodes of this I've recorded now? I think it's the sixth recording or seventh recording. And everybody has surprised me in some way. Everybody, without exception. And nearly always good surprises, you know. Surprises them. And that's why I wanted to do this. Because we're an industry of generally really very nice and very interesting people. And we get together and we talk about work.
You know, that's probably one of the biggest gifts I've ever heard anybody try to give to this industry, because I'd love to repeat 100 times what you said. We have some of the biggest hearts you'll find in any industry in the world. But everybody uses work as the bond.
Yeah. No, that's fair. People, I'm still looking at this personnel listing on When Love Finds You. Fucking Michael McDonald did some of the backing vocals.
Yeah.
Gladys Knight duet. Jesus.
Vince is the king. So when you go back to the history of country music, you've got a guy named George Jones, which is really probably the grandfather of country music. Like, there's the Johnny Cashes and all those things, and all of those people that have come in and made their big mark. But when you look behind the scenes, there's these people that have coached, mentored, financed, loved, protected, built everybody. George Jones is one of those guys, but like, Vince Gill is the reference for everybody.
He certainly seems to have done well.
He has. And that album is about his struggle to leave his wife and marry Amy Grant.
I could have totally given him some tips on that. I mean, fuck me, I've burnt some bridges. Vince, just give me a call next time.
Yeah, we're not going there, because like, I usually, I'm still standing on the bridge when I blow it up. So that's, as I love to say in The Office, next slide.
But that's just a way of making sure that it goes up correctly.
Oh, listen, there's nothing like leadership by example.
Seriously. Honestly, do you know the person that coined that quote? Captain of the Titanic.
I have no doubt.
We're going to move on to your three books. Now, these can be any books, fiction, nonfiction, poetry. It can be a book of luxury toilet paper, although probably not that so much.
Yeah, we won't go there, because luxury toilet paper usually has ink in it, and that's really not cool stuff. So,
and also, we've got to get down to your object, and it might be your object choice.
We were talking about the Tilly orifice before?
We were talking about the Tilly orifice, yes. It's not nearly as saucy as it sounds.
It's funny how you make all those links in life. You know, the brain's a crazy thing. But the books. The first one is a series of books, and it's the most important. So I only found the courage to start telling this story about 4 or 5 years ago. And the first time I told it, I had to walk off stage because I couldn't get through it. I walked off, rebooted, and came back on. But I've told it enough now where I'm usually able to get it out without a terrible amount of pain, guilt, and shame. So at a very early age, it was very clear that I did not fit in where I was born. And my mother had a very serious struggle to understand, how does she manage an extraterrestrial in a small fishing village in Newfoundland? And you can imagine, my dad had a grade 3 education, didn't know how to write, was very good at manual work, but manual work in those days didn't really get you a decent pay. So at the age of 9, I don't know who figured this out, but my mother figured out that maybe me out of burning down a school or becoming on the international wanted list or something, she took out a 5-year bank loan and bought me an encyclopedia set. So you can imagine how much that she had as expendable cash to pay this back every month.
Yeah.
And she bought me an encyclopedia set. And at 9 years old, I sat down and I read the whole series and uploaded my brain, started to make all these correlations and started to think differently, started to see that there was a world out there. And one of the coolest things that came out of this reading experience on the living room floor was I wrote down a load of places that I had to visit in my life. Specifically, it turned out to be the very cool number. There was 108 places that I needed to see in my life. I've only got 2 left.
What's left?
St. Petersburg and Antarctica.
I've done St. Petersburg. I didn't get to go to the Hermitage. I did go to a party, and I did negotiate with a young Russian woman who spoke no English to buy her mittens from her in a KFC.
Okay.
Got him as a gift from my friend Jules to help her quit smoking, and it worked, and she still has the mittens. And this was 23 years ago. They're important mittens. But from what I saw, St. Petersburg is really nice.
Well, St. Petersburg holds a piece to the global puzzle. Like, there's pieces in Guatemala. There's pieces in Thailand. Of course, Egypt has some cool pieces. There's a little piece not far from Cuba in the water. So a lot of the research that I do on ancient science, ancient knowledge, it's hard to do these things theoretically. You've got to have boots on the ground. Mm-hmm. So part of my journey of, I don't know, the 110 countries I've been to.
Oh, okay.
I've been in major cities I wanted to go to. I'm getting close to 500. But in the countries that I've been to, it's all about putting this electromagnetic puzzle together, if I could boil it down to that.
Dare I ask about this electromagnetic puzzle?
Well, you know, if I was to have one of those popular books on my list, which I don't, I'd say that book, The Law of Attraction, even though it was built the wrong way, the principle of having an atmosphere around the planet, having a noosphere or a biosphere around the planet, having an ionosphere around the planet, that's where the satellites hang out, so that you can bounce signals up and down. That same principle exists in the human body. And up until quantum science became a thing, it was hard to explain this stuff scientifically. And if you started to talk about it, you got thrown into the holistic realm, which was, you know, there's a period in Salem, Massachusetts, in the United States. There's a period when Bruno got burnt in Italy. There was times in history you couldn't talk about this stuff. But now that quantum mechanics is like rock solid and quantum science is rock solid, the movement of energy and how you consciously and unconsciously move it through light and through sound, it's getting pretty mainstream. So I do a lot of research in that realm because the human brain is really a receptor and a broadcaster of these macro and micro frequencies. You regret asking?
Never. I never regret asking questions. It is. I mean, I have some theories of my own, but this is not the place for my theories. This is Earl.
Well, as you can imagine, I'm a really big fan of Tesla, not the car, the guy, the real guy, not Musket. But Tesla, then you go up to Einstein a little bit, then you go up to Max Planck. Max Planck is serious stuff. So.
Yeah, well, that's why he's got institutes named after him.
Yeah, and he has a really, really uncomfortable chair in Berlin that I got to sit in once, so I just wanted to sit in his chair.
I wouldn't expect Max Planck to have a comfy chair.
No, especially, you know, I see the reference to Planck, but I cannot get to a fun joke. I had a lumbar joke, but I thought that would be stretching that too far.
I see what you did there.
Yeah, I'm kind of impressed with that one. My brain hurts, but it's cool.
But also for anybody listening, it is an oral joke. It definitely doesn't work if it's written down because there is a C in Planck.
That's true.
A friend of mine was a research scientist and she used to work at the Max Planck Institute at Lübeck.
No way. What an incredible period in history. And we used all of that genius to create a nuclear bomb, if you can believe it. Well, yeah. Not even nuclear bomb hydrogen bomb.
There's a fabulous, I don't know if you've read this, but there's a fantastic biography of the dude whose name has gone clean out of my fucking head, of course. The guy that figured out what the Northern Lights were. And the biography is just called The Northern Lights, and it's a fabulous book. But it, by necessity, it has to go into the scientific culture in Norway in the 1920s. And it's really, really interesting. I mean, it's a fabulous book by a lady called Lucy Jago. That is a very, very good book.
I'm going to look her up because the Northern Lights, well, the Northern Lights have been documented for maybe 4,000 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can boil it down to something as stupid as a solar flare, but it goes way up on the electromagnetic spectrum of interdimensional energy transfer.
This dude, I mean, yeah, it sent him basically batshit by the end. Mm-hmm. It was his life's work, fundamentally.
I'm going to have a look at that. I've never heard that name before.
It's an interesting book, and I wish I could remember who it's about. But you know what? I'm going to see if I can look it up because Google is our friend, except, of course, she's not on Wikipedia, is she? Of course, it's a book if it's a book I've read, it's not going to be on frigging Wikipedia, is it?
Well, that's good news. If you look up here, I've got a couple that you won't find on Wikipedia either, like this gem that comes from a different century.
Okay, for those watching in black and white, Ella's holding up a book called Instantaneous Personal Magnetism. Do you take that one to G2E with you?
And if you look, it even talks about artificial magnetism. And I lucked out to get this version because it's a first edition in. Yeah, this is a cool one. I got a couple of them up there because I try to collect very special books because in those days there was actually different energy projected into the books. So that one's a cool one. Got a couple of other ones up there that I really, really love. That
found his name.
Got to pick up on the road. Cool.
Christian Birkeland. That's the Norwegian that figured out the Northern Lights. I feel like I can rest now.
There he is. Cool. I'm gonna dig in.
But it reads like it was written by a proper journalist. You know, well, it was written by a proper journalist.
Suffering from severe paranoia due to his barbiturate and as a sleeping tablet. Oh, there you go. So
yeah, he didn't have a great time. I think it's fair to say, but you know, that period, the 1920s and all that, I mean, it's amazing. And what Norway was doing with hydroelectric power, most of us still haven't caught up with. But anyway, so we've got your first book and big respect to your mum for that. Big respect to your mum.
Yeah, I don't think there. I got to give her the level of gratitude she deserved for that one. Because I use it to run away.
However, Earl, honestly, that kind of gift, she wanted you to run away. She wanted you to go and see those places. I say that with absolute certainty. A gift like that, that she has to pay off for so long, that's given with unconditional love, dude.
The coolest thing is 2 years ago, I got to go full circle. I was invited to my hometown to give the keynote for an event, which is way outside of my realm. And when I got up on stage, because it was an oil and gas thing, when I got up on stage, I decided to tell the whole town what I thought of them instead. And I wanted to remind every single person that I could pick out in the room how critical they were on the journey to get me to being me. And believe it or not, retired like many years before, the bank manager that approved the loan was in the room. And when I told that story, you should have seen her cry because I was very black and white with her. We weren't even allowed to have that loan. I don't think my mother qualified for it, and the bank manager gave it to her anyway. So the one of the cool
This was
things
back
I love.
before computer decisions, dude, when
Oh yeah.
people gave loans to people.
People talked to people. And one of the things I'm really passionate about is putting together the matrix of all of the people that have come together all over the world to get me and keep me on my path. And that keeps me as humble as I can be, being who I am. But I love trying to re-engineer what piece, what person had on my path. And that day was just such a healing moment to be able to point to people in the room and say, I'm here standing here, and you all revere me as this guy from home that made it and went away and stuff. I said, no, time out. It's all because of you. It has nothing to do with me. I'm just the packaged product of everybody's ingredient.
I hear you. It takes a village.
I came from a good one.
Good skills. You've still got two books left, though, I think.
Second one's an easy one. And I really hope somebody reads it because it's gone under the radar forever. And it's called The Road Less Traveled by Scott Peck.
Okay.
So when I got out of the army, I went into a deep dark hole. And that deep dark hole didn't have a ladder to get out. And I was there for a while. From sleeping in my car a little bit to all kinds of different crazy things, people taking me in and just trying to figure out how to find the picture of the puzzle to see if you could start finding the pieces of the puzzle. And this, like I said, random generated angel showed up in my life and goes, Earl, you need to read this book. And all of a sudden, I had the first rung on the ladder. And it just was a locomotive from there. I went from that one to the Celestine Prophecy and just started ramping up. And then the list of books, I could go on forever, but The Road Less Traveled is really the cornerstone that ramped it all up.
So I'm looking it up because the name rang a bell, but I wasn't sure if the name rang a bell because of the, is it a Robert Frost quote?
Sorry, I'm in Nevada, so I'm spraying a little bit of rose water on me to keep my face from cracking and drying up and falling off.
It's okay. I'm in Wales and my own sweat is doing that for me. We're having a heat wave for Wales, which is extraordinary.
Does that mean it's 16 degrees?
No, I think it's like
Oh
24 or something today, which is
my
like,
God.
that doesn't happen.
We're speaking in Celsius, by the way. We're not in Antarctica today. But a heat wave, I would love to bring you out on my patio for 5 minutes for a drink of water. It's 45.
It's 25.
Yeah, well.
But 25 in the UK comes with high humidity. And so it feels grim. 25 anywhere else, it's like your sweat does its job. You are cooled and refreshed. And it's a dry heat, can handle that all day. Humid like this, I'm like, fucking hell, I feel that. This must be how sheep feel all year round.
You know something? I'm sure there's a Scottish joke in there somewhere, but I have no idea how sheep feel.
Well, it's that joke is usually made about the Welsh as well, because
Why do you think I deflected to Scotland?
I'm not Welsh. I'm living just within Wales, and I do love Wales.
I
People are
think
awful
it's
though.
oh yeah.
No, they're great.
I was going to say the opposite. I've had nothing but absolutely extraordinary experiences with people from Wales.
On the whole, they are absolutely terrific. But sometimes, if you go into North Wales, you go into a pub, everybody's speaking English. You order a drink with an English accent, everybody starts speaking Welsh without fail.
Well, sounds like where I'm from.
So I'm just looking at the road less traveled. So it's by a psychiatrist called M. Scott Peck. And it was the book that made his reputation. So it's a description of the attributes that make a fulfilled human being. So in a combination of his work as a psychiatrist and his observations as a human being. So
Yeah.
if I get the new illustrated edition of this, are you pictured at the back as the perfect example?
Yeah, I'd say you'd see me on page 99 as work in progress more than anything else.
No, page 99, that's in the chapter about impotence. Oh, hang on,
Are
sorry, I
we being
misread that.
recorded? Are we being
I
recorded?
no, I misread that. It's importance. I always get those two confused.
Well, I'm
They're
sorry to hear that.
so
You
similar. So similar.
might want to have a look at that one, because
No,
it.
well, I had an argument with a lady a couple of weeks ago. I kept telling her that I was important.
Well, you
I'll get my
shouldn't.
cool.
If you said that with a Scottish accent, that'd be really funny and potent.
Third book. What's your third?
The third's one the hardest because that's where it just explodes out. But I'll give you the third book because the third book has the best story. So I stumbled onto this book, and like I was chewing through these books. I stumbled onto this book called The Book of Secrets, written by a guy named Deepak Chopra.
That's why it rings a bell.
Way, way, way back when Deepak used to put his email at the end of the book. In other words, if you have any questions, just write me. So I read this book, and this book was a bridge too far, if you understand. This one was a jump from the little leagues to the major leagues. And that book broke my brain. So, in the principle of who I am, I took out those little yellow stickies. And everywhere I didn't understand something, I put a sticky in the book. So, I was up to like 600 trillion stickies. And of course, his email was at the end of the book. So, I wrote him an email and I said, "Listen, I don't understand this book. I have questions." Totally shocked. He writes me back and goes, "Yeah, great." He goes, "I'm in New York giving this conference. Come to the conference. Here's the only rule. It's a 3-day conference. You can only ask questions to me on day three." I said, "Deal." So I went to New York, went to his conference. Day three, he had this big shit-eating grin on his face, looked over, pointed at me, goes, "Earl, do you have any questions?" So, "No, sir." Everything was fixed. He sewed it all together in the most eloquent way I've ever seen. And from there I was hooked. He's one of the good guys. And it was actually Deepak who pointed me towards Wayne Dyer. And Wayne Dyer, if you have ever seen me, my pictures of with him on LinkedIn, two guys that have fundamentally shaken every fiber of my being is Wayne Dyer and Bruce Lipton. And I should mention John DeMartini, of course, because he's like he's family. But Deepak was really the pivot to say, go here, look for this, do that. So that book
Just looking
is
up
probably.
Wayne Dyer. He's a was I'm sorry, was a self-help author and motivational speaker.
Very, very deeply, holistically connected, spoke directly from the heart. And the picture that I put up on LinkedIn once every year is when we sat together and had a chat, and I let him hug me, and I really don't let humans touch me. And he died not long after, I'm talking maybe a month after. So I was so blessed spend that special moment with him. And the thing that I retained from that guy is when he looks into your eyes, he sees right down. It was crazy how he used to see people and you didn't feel uncomfortable with him seeing you. It was undescribable.
Okay. I said, somebody always surprises me on these things, right? I wasn't kidding. So we've got three albums. We've got three books. That brings us to three movies. Okay. Now, your home country of Canada, aka America's Hat, has a fine tradition of filmmaking. But I will be very surprised if you pick any David Cronenberg films.
I would be very surprised as well, because my first one is going to confuse you.
Uh-oh.
Fandango. Yeah, here we go.
Now, I know of a movie called Fandango. Is it the same one?
Kevin Costner.
Okay.
B-movie. Written before he was big.
Yeah, but
and I'm sure the statute of limitations is over, so I could actually tell why.
Come on, bring it.
So Fandango is about a couple of guys all getting drafted, all going to Vietnam, and they get in their car and they go to the Mexican border. And they bury a bottle of Dom Perignon. And the goal is they all have to make it back from war. Going to be harder to talk about than I thought. And they all make it back from the war. And they drive back and get the bottle of Dom Perignon. So when I was at the Royal Military College, I had this crazy, crazy idea that we were going to leave Montreal on a Friday evening when they let us out of the college and unlocked the gates. We were going to drive to Disney World. We were going to go to Disney World. We were going to get a picture with Mickey Mouse first. Long story, not for here. But number two, we were going to bury a bottle of Dom Perignon right in front of the castle, off to the left, next to the bridge and the footpath in front of where you go to see the bears. So we raced to Florida in this car, and we made it exactly on time because we had a very tight time appreciation. We make it. We get our picture with Mickey Mouse. We were illegally wearing half of our uniforms. Thank God there's no internet back then. We got out. We created a formation. We distracted the security. We dug the hole. We got the bottle of Dom in the hole, buried it up, left, went on about our careers. And then we picked a date and we did the Fandango. Bunch of hairy, old, broken, beaten, scarred men. We rented a minivan and it was the most horrific experience to take a bunch of army officers, army veterans on this trip back to get Dom. But we did it. And we had the whole crew and everybody was there. And it was a very emotional moment because that's when our crew kind of disbanded and went our own ways. So I lived that movie in real life and it is a much less fun in real life.
Love that Mickey Mouse is your Mexico. I'm not sure you could be more 1980s than that.
Not going on the subject because we picked Mickey for a totally different reason. So
I'm going to have to watch this movie because I enjoy movies. I enjoy watching movies by writer directors because they tend to be quite a singular vision. Often if there's more than one screenwriter, for example, or a separate screenwriter director, it tends to have a feeling of a movie being made by committee. But this was written and directed by Kevin Reynolds, who did a couple of other movies with Costner. Hasn't actually made that many movies in his career. And I'm just really curious about it. So I'm going to go see if I can find that later. And if it's shit, I'm going to need you to pay my Prime bill.
Piece cake.
So what's movie two?
Movie two is probably one of the greatest expressions of one of my greatest failures in life. When you join the Royal Military College and you go to you get into your squadron and you meet all your new friends, and the king of the kings or the queen of the queens are the fighter pilots. So, of course, I wanted to be a fighter pilot like everybody else. So, of course, my movie is Top Gun. I lived, breathed, and watched Top Gun 700 times. But my body was not designed to take negative G-forces.
I'm not sure anybody's body is designed for that.
There are bodies can take it better than others. So, I failed out, of course. I did not get selected as a fighter pilot. And I went on my merry way. And I've carried this failure my whole life.
I certainly think less of you now.
So here's the funny part, and it's pretty timely that we're talking this week. So my birthday was last week. So my wife thought it would be great if I got rid of all of this pain, shame, trauma from not being a fighter pilot. And she booked me one of those experiences where I got to fly a fighter jet. And we take off from the runway and the guy just nails it. We go straight up. He flips it upside down and starts doing all these things while we're heading out to the Nevada desert. And I'll be completely honest, and I'm pretty okay in the holistic realm. My soul left my body for 40 minutes. And when he gave me the stick and goes, your turn, let's have at it. And I'm doing the maneuvers and flying around. I was already dead at that point.
In a good way.
Well, no, it was the hardest thing I've ever done. We're like, I don't know, 5 days later now. I'm starting to recover. But what fighter pilots can do and go through, my body did not have the ability to do that. So I think I'm cured of Top Gun, but that movie was something I carried with me my whole career, my whole life.
Well, for people of a certain age, I mean, it's still very much a cultural touchstone.
Yep.
And let's not
the
forget.
The second British, was incredible.
British director for the first one.
Tom Cruise did a pretty incredible job in the second one, though.
The second one was surprisingly excellent. Mm. And they cured one of the issues with the first one. So, like, and I'm the only person that's ever critical of the first one. But, you know, they had to use so much of the US Air Force's training materials because they weren't allowed to film certain things. Mm. Fair enough. But that meant that some of the camera work was shit. Some of the film stock was terrible. And you see this a lot in movies. In fight scenes, if you have actors rather than fighters, they tend to use very choppy editing to try and inject physical pace. And that's also what they had to do with the first Top Gun movie. And that's why the editing is so choppy around all the flight scenes. The editing and the way that you became a part of the action in the sequel, they totally, totally nailed it.
Hallucinating.
It's fabulous. Enjoyed it a lot. Because, of course, like everybody else, I was expecting it to be shit.
Not me. I was one of the ones holding the candle.
And it had Jennifer Connelly in. You cannot go wrong with that woman. What a talent.
That's a true statement.
What a talent.
That's a true statement.
I do believe she will not be fully appreciated until she's probably dead. Anyway, by the by. And people, when I say that, people are like, yeah, it's just because she's beautiful. No, it's because she's ridiculously talented.
She's a master of her craft.
Fucking hell, have you seen Requiem for a Dream?
Yep.
I get depressed just saying the name of the film. She's unreal in that. But anyway, I'm getting distracted again. So we've done two movies. So we've had Fandango. And Fandango was in the video shop that I used to work in, and I never watched it. So it makes it one of about five films in there that I never watched.
On the Fandango cover, there's like a kind of like a blue-green old car.
It was not the same cover in the UK.
And I still think that it was the genesis of the idea of the movie The Hangover.
Yeah, maybe. Mm. Although there's been a lot of sort of road movies in... I don't know. But then everything comes from everywhere else, right? So what's your third movie?
The third one is probably... The reason why I like the third one is because I use it as an example to teach all the time. And it's the movie Apollo 13.
Okay.
And...
I'm listening.
It's a movie. It's one of those popular movies and stuff. But the... I love movies for the lesson, not the entertainment. And then in Apollo 13, those guys should have died. They had no chance to succeed. They had no chance to live. But between socks and cardboard boxes and all of these things, they made an oxygen machine, which got them home. So in the spirit of all my civilian career has been almost completely in startups, in always making something from nothing, the value that I place on ingenuity, innovation, the word in French, which is much more powerful than in English, it's called débrouillardise. For somebody to be able to look at nothing and make something out of it, it's one of the things that I appreciate and value the most.
What was the phrase that we used before we started recording? Necessity is the mother of invention.
Yep.
And also Apollo 13 has Bill Paxton in.
Which, what can you say about that? Like, even if he does like a tornado film, he nails it. So,
talk about you're gone too soon. Wow.
Yep.
One of my genuine heroes, Bill Paxton.
And I am a fan of Tom Hanks. I know that might get a couple of tomatoes thrown at me, but there's a whole bunch of things in that movie that were outside of the Hollywood dogma that I really loved. But when I hire on somebody that works directly with me, I want to make sure that they've seen that movie to see how my brain works on what I expect when we're in front of a blank page or a black curtain.
Mm-hmm. I hear you. It's a very interesting example for what you want. An extreme one, you might say. But also, I get
startups never succeed without being extreme. Because mathematically, before you even start the company, you have a 99% chance to fail. Like, I think sperm has a better life expectancy in the womb than a startup.
That is an interesting analogy.
Yeah, welcome to my brain.
Okay.
So is that the bad surprise? Like, I gave you the good surprise. Did you get the bad one now? Are we even?
No. So like, you know, we had Walter on. We did a recording with Walter Bunyo a few weeks ago. And like, he surprised me because he was like, he told me he had a massive crush on Whitney Houston.
Wow.
Well, that's awesome. Why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
But it still surprised me because that's the thing with questions like, I don't know where this is going to go. I haven't got a clue. It's the beauty of this. It's the madness. Now you've got one song, not on any of the albums. The reason that I chose a song as a thing is because, and it's the example I always use, it's perfectly feasible that somebody would choose Eye of the Tiger, but nobody is going to choose a Survivor album.
True.
And if they do, then they're barred.
You mean a one-hit wonder on a way too big piece of plastic?
It turns out they actually had a few hits.
Yeah.
I mean, two from the Rocky films, Rocky 3 and Rocky 4. But they had some hits in the US, but not. You know, nobody's picking a Survivor album. What's your song, Earl? Have you got one?
So you got to hold on for this when you're going to have to Google it, because I can bet you like a monster that you've never heard of him or the song. So the guy's name is Ron Hynes, R-O-N-H-Y-N-E-S.
Okay.
Oddly enough, he comes from where I come from. He's really one of our iconic singers that sadly passed away very, very young. And the song is called The Boy from Old Pelican. And I'll spell it because Pelican, oh God, I've been one of those days. The Boy from Old Pelican. Old Pelican is a place in Conception Bay where my dad is from. So The okay. Boy from Old Pelican, the words are, just to give you an idea, I think I'm up to about 16 or 17,000 times that I've heard that song. When I'm out in the garage building stuff, I just put it on repeat. It just runs all day. Okay. And it's really, it. Ron wrote a lot of songs about his relationship with his father. And he's just a folk hero from Newfoundland. And I can't say that I have a favorite album of his, because I think every song he's made is a hit. But that one especially, it's really a parallel of my story that, you know, I left, had to go, doing my thing. But I'm still the same old guy from Placentia Bay, Newfoundland. Just temporarily displaced, because one of the cool things that I did before my mother died is she had bought her plot to be buried right next to my dad. So I bought my plot right next to her. And the joke was, I've moved 40 something times in my life. And my mother used to keep a little book with a pencil and write down my new address every 6 months or a year when I was moving. And just before she died, I announced to her the great news that I finally had a permanent address. And it was right next to her in the graveyard. And, you know, this song encompasses a lot of those things, because we ran away from home, conquered the world, but I'm still a guy from home that doesn't live at home, if that makes sense. So... And the Newfoundland culture is a very complex culture of survival. So Ron is really my chief therapist in residence. And I'll switch between four or five of his songs to just keep the ball rolling so the fur balls get coughed up on a regular basis. But that one's the iconic hit.
Okay, I was just reading the lyrics. I see what you're saying. I mean, fundamentally, the song is about being a Newfoundlander and being away from home. So I can see why that would resonate. Okay. You now have a pet to choose.
Am I allowed to steal my own pet and take them with me?
Well, this can be a pet from any point in your life, right? It doesn't have to be a living pet.
Yeah. So his name is Sterling. He's a mini schnauzer. He's a very rare color of mini schnauzers because he's chocolate with like a little bit of gray and white in very strategic places. Having a dog for me is one of the most groundbreaking events in my whole life, because All my youth, because I was alone, didn't really have very many friends except two or three, like Sherry and Aiden, cousin Tony, just a couple of people that used to really protect me from the wolves. I'd ask my parents maybe every 3 months for 12 years for a dog. And they said no my whole youth. I left and went to the army, and 3 months later, they got a dog. And that one, that's a fur ball. I still haven't found the source code to. And lo and behold, during COVID, this dog started sending my wife and I emails. I don't know how she tripped on or I tripped on to a cookie setting somewhere, but this mini schnauzer named Sterling kept sending us emails going, "Hi, my name is Sterling. Please pick me." And after X number of emails, you know that repetitive marketing does work. You either block them or buy them. I called the breeder in Utah and I go, "Hi, you got a mini schnauzer?" And she goes, "No, we don't have any for this year because it's COVID. Everybody's buying dogs." She called me back a month later. She goes, "You're not going to believe this. The mother gave birth and there's an extra dog in the litter that was not on the list. And it's a very rare color, very rare type of mini schnauzer. Do you want it?" I said, "Sold." But this dog has a major, major issue. He doesn't know his dog. And I've developed, and like being who I am, being wary of humans, being having trouble finding safe places and things like this, this dog has become one of the safest places I've ever been in my entire life. The relation that I've, ship that I've built with this dog is, it's beyond words. I feel safe. The dog senses when I'm having a moment and will just leave whatever it's doing, come over and lie down in my lap and say, "Hey, you're good. I'm here. We got this." It's just mind-boggling. I've never had that experience before until the dog showed up 5 years ago, 4.5 years ago.
It's interesting. I get where you're coming from. So nearly 20 years ago, I met my ex-wife and her daughter, Lorna. And, you know, I married Zoe and we all moved in together. And Lorna kept saying, "Can we get a dog? Can we get a dog?" And I'm like, "No, because I'll end up walking it all the time and all of that." Anyway, me and Zoe talked about it and we said, "Fuck it, let's get a dog." And so Zoe, very much a cat person, she goes into this rescue place and she says, "I wonder if you can help me. I'm looking for a dog about so tall, needs to be really calm, needs to be really chilled." And I'm outside and I'm just thinking, they're just going to tell her to fuck off and get a cat. But the woman didn't. She just happened to be talking to the woman who placed dogs for this charity. And the woman said, "I've got a dog I'd like you to meet." And we went and met this dog and I wasn't overly impressed because this is going to sound a little bit bizarre. It's going to make me sound like possibly a serial killer or something. Dogs tend to be petrified of me. Like piss themselves where they're sitting, kind of scared. It's shown itself in very strange ways over the years. But this dog wasn't scared. She was submissive, but not scared. So I'm like, okay. Take her back home. Lorna meets her. Instant love. But the next morning I wake up and I've left the doors open so that I can hear the dog if the dog's distressed in the night. I wake up the next morning, can hear this really strange sort of swishing sound. And the dog is just sitting next to my side of the bed, staring at me, waiting for me to wake up. And the noise that's woken me up is her tail wagging on the carpet. And she's just there waiting for me, wow, as good as gold. And that was that. But that led directly to me having children later. It was having Lorna in my life and then having Millie in my life that led to me thinking, do you know what? Maybe I won't be like my dad was. Maybe I can change this shit. And it was direct, but it was that Millie was a huge part of that and realizing, wow, that. So I get exactly where you're coming from.
Yep. A dog can be a great healer.
Now, when my kids were born, everybody was like, "I've got my dog on my bank card." Everybody's like, "Oh, you're going to have to change your bank card now." I'm like, why? I don't fucking think so. But anyway, yes, I very much hear you. Very much. Well, here's to Sterling.
Here's to Sterling. He's a good kid. He's hanging around here somewhere. He's just, I locked him out of the office so that we could talk.
It's fair. He'd probably be on your lap now.
He would already be in the conversation.
You now have one object to choose. What's your object?
Desert island.
Tropical island.
One object.
Like for me, I always think it might be lip balm or floss, something like that.
No, outsource that. Have it flown in. I'd have to bring my guitar, my acoustic guitar. I only have one right now, but it's a very special guitar. I was very privileged to have it made for me. So I'd probably fly with my guitar so that I could keep trying to get the song out that's in my head, I guess.
It's a great choice. Not getting that song out, because for all I know, it's terrible.
It really sucks.
But something like a guitar, something where, you know, it's like and I hate saying this, but it's sort of like golf. You play golf every day for the rest of your life and still be absolutely shite at it, but you'll enjoy the journey.
Yep.
And I am not a golfer, but I know lots of people who've been playing guitar for years and years and years, and they still suck. But they love it. So I could totally get behind
it's that. A great place to hide.
And I won't be able to hear you from my island, so that works.
That's probably good news.
Next, you get to choose a dessert.
Oh, that's a hard one. Oh, Jesus. So I'll have to be truthful because this is a recent discovery, like in the last year. Hershey bar.
Really?
Oh, listen, I've had some incredible cakes, like the Tom Cruise coconut cake. I actually got on the list and had one delivered from New York. So I love all of these exquisite desserts. But if you put a very thin Hershey bar, not the thick one, it has to be thin. If you put that in the fridge and not the freezer, it's magic. Just magic.
Now, I'm a great advocate of fridge chocolate because a great fridge chocolate is not necessarily the same as great chocolate.
No, it's so two different worlds.
In the UK, we've got two main sort of milk chocolate brands, Galaxy and Dairy Milk, right?
Mm-hmm.
Dairy Milk, they've changed the recipe and they fucked it up. Galaxy is the richer chocolate.
Yep.
But Dairy Milk in the fridge, no competition.
Yeah, so that was something that I stumbled into last year. Because before that, you would have asked me, I said, easy, it's Kit Kat. So Air Canada knows me well. Air Canada treats me like gold. I am so blessed with that airline. And when I sit in the airplane, it's like they're programmed. Here's your Coke Zero, here's your Kit Kat. And because the Kit Kats have been like, they're kept in coolers, it's cold like it was in the fridge.
Nice.
But the discovery of the Hershey bar was kind of like the trumpets, the music, and the angels and all that stuff. So, and I love all of these fancy desserts. Big fan of a whole bunch of things. But I tell you one thing, in a period of stress, a little piece of a Hershey bar is kind of like, I feel like Braveheart, ready to roll.
I hear you. Sometimes it doesn't have to be fancy.
Nope.
They got this dark chocolate with sea salt in it. And they do it in these little bars in one of the supermarkets in the UK. That stuff in the fridge. Oh. It's good. I mean, I don't eat chocolate anymore. But if I did, I dream about that particular fridge chocolate.
Well, I still eat a little bit of chocolate. That's something that I have to keep a little bit of pleasure in my life, and that's one of them.
When I worked at I worked at QVC in the UK in my mid-20s, and they had these really fancy vending machines. And they had and I don't think this is one of those bars that's available in other countries. I might be wrong. It's called a Star Bar. And it's like you buy it off a shelf in a newsagent's. And it's all right. Buy it from a refrigerated vending machine, and it feels as though it was handcrafted by Jesus. And on the day that the vending machine would be stocked, me and one of the other copywriters there would be by the vending machine. We'd just be like, should we get one now or should we wait for it to get cold? He was great. But anyway, it's entirely
by... I'm really glad you understand, because I guess everybody is expecting the flambés or the infused chocolate, whatever, but nope. Nope.
No, I totally get where you're coming from. The refrigeration aspect is the key.
Changed the whole world.
Like, dairy milk is fine, but dairy milk out the fridge, fuck.
Yep, and I've tested them all, from Snickers bars to Mars bars.
Now, I like a fridge Snickers.
Me too. Mm. Mars bar in the fridge is pretty impressive.
Yeah, it's completely different. Mm. Complete. It's probably the bar that changes state the most.
Yep. Yeah, but you got to make sure it's not too cold or you leave your teeth in the bar, which is...
That's true. Mm. Well, with a Mars bar, what I used to do, I slice it up.
Mm.
Slices really well.
You're way too fancy for me.
Yeah, I've introduced tools. God, what a fucking... I'm so middle class.
Man, way up there.
I've never been accused of middle classery before. And I accused myself, so that works. So we're down to the last two things. Well, it's the last thing, but it's in two parts. Now, this used to be you get to give your younger self one piece of advice and you choose when you get it, right? But I changed it. I changed it with Walter, actually. Walter was the first person to get this one. So it's two things. One, a piece of advice from yourself to your younger self, and you choose when you get it. And the other one is a piece of advice from your younger self to you now. And that's the tricky one, I think.
And the second one is a piece of advice from my younger self to me now.
Yep.
Yeah, it's painful. So the piece of advice going back in time the right way, it's pretty easy, and it's a cliche, but it's really something I only figured out in the last like year or two of my life. It'll all work out. So when I look back at my life, I spent so many gazillions of hours overthinking the negative, and just instead of holding the flashlight and going, you know, fuck it. It'll work out. And it's funny how life changes when you adopt that mantra. I saw the difference in 3 weeks.
I'm not arguing. But the other one is more difficult.
Yeah,
one of the things that led me to thinking of this. I was with my youngest, and he's 7, nearly 8. He'll be 8 when this comes out. And he's a bit of a diamond, and he is very similar to me. He does not give two fucks what anybody thinks. He is doing his own thing, and he's happy doing his own thing. He's a very self-contained kid. He's very funny. He's very sweet. He's very spirited, but he doesn't give a fuck about whether you approve or not. And I'd love for him to retain that. But we were walking along, and I said to him, do you ever feel like people maybe don't get you, or, you know? And he started talking, and he really talked, and he was like, yeah, you know, like sometimes I've got to explain jokes to people or something like that, or, you know, feel like maybe I don't. No, he didn't say he feels like he doesn't fit in, but he sometimes feels a little bit extra, you might say. And I said, well, you know what? I felt like that when I was your age as well. And what I've realized as I've gotten older is that it's all right to be different. It's well and truly all right to be different. So because those people that, you know, maybe look at you and single you out as being different, they're the people that pay to read books by people like you and pay to watch movies written and directed by people like you. So enjoy it. And I'm not sure whether his 7-year-old frame quite took in what I was trying to say, but I hope it'll stick with him a little bit. And then maybe in 25 years, he'll think, fuck, I get it now.
It's a seed planted in the deep dark. It all is. There are parents out there that look for instant gratification, and yeah, that doesn't work with a child. You're building a forest. So you've got to wait the 30 years for the trees to rise.
Well, mostly he's doing grand. They're all doing grand in their different ways.
True.
But yeah, so that's that. That was in the back of my head when I was thinking about this as a question. It was, you know, my younger self would tell that to my older self like 10 years ago.
Well, mine's the theme that I've struggled with my whole life, and I've done these exercises in psychology retreats where you're brought in a form of meditation or hypnotherapy back to a period of your life, And you have to talk to the adult. So the answer there for me is pretty simple. It's always been the same one that I keep struggling with, and it's have more fun.
That's one that's impossible to argue against as well.
That one, it's been a struggle my whole life because my brain is really hardwired to do missions. That's why the Army was interesting. But if I got a task to do at home, I'll get up at 5 a.m. and I'll go to bed when it's done. And the have fun part is something, it's a concept that still eludes me, I think.
Well, maybe you need to re-gear the definition of fun, because just because it's a task doesn't mean it can't be enjoyable, right? Yep. And there is a part of you that is enjoying the completion of the task.
Oh, yeah, of course.
So it doesn't mean that it's not fun.
Getting across the finish line, it's the drug. It's the race.
Yeah.
But having more fun, for me, the definition would be doing things that are not work-related, because my whole life, if I'm sitting on a Saturday morning and I have the choice between, I don't know, hit a bucket of golf balls or do a financial report or go out and go to a movie or work on a piece of tech that I want to get done, choose mission. And yeah. I know it comes from a place of, I know it comes from a place that's not self-centered, if that makes sense. So that one I'm still working on pretty hard, and it's a black box to figure out.
I think, do you know what? I think Sterling can help you there.
Because he does. I take my time to play with him.
I always remember with Millie, I used to say, my publisher would call me sometimes first thing in the morning when he got into work, and I'd be out with the dog fucking about.
Yeah, that one's harder for me.
He eventually realized that I am working in my head while I'm out, but there's no point in phoning me because I'm there and I'm present with the dog. I'm like background processing shit while I'm there. When I get into my desk, I'm ready to roll, right? But I used to say, and I do still say this sometimes, I am not going to get to the end of my life and wish that I'd stroked the dog less.
My go-to with Sterling is I just look him straight in the eyes when I need a break, and I say, you want to fight? And we head to the bedroom. He jumps on the bed, and I let him nibble on me. I push at him, pull on his whiskers. He gets really pissed off when I do that. And we just, because he's hardcore alpha. So we just go at it for 5 or 10 minutes until one of us hurts each other too much.
Until one of you bleeds.
And then we just look at each other and go, truce, truce, and we go off about our day. So that one's a really cool one. But like I said, it's something that I want to institutionalize as a process because I'm not getting any younger. And companies come and go. Projects come and go. I've started to work on the frequency of joy. So gratitude, I've got down to a science. Enthusiasm, I've figured out more than about 60 to 70% of it. And now I've started to work on joy, and it is not an easy one. So that's the reason why I mentioned that one now. It's to have more fun, because fun fueled from inside, from your highest values, that fuels a joy that's infectious. And that's the one that I've taken up in this solar year that I've just started.
Okay. I don't know how you're going to do that, but it should be a fun journey.
I saw what you did there.
I saw what I did there. I work with words.
I'm taking this on as a serious mission.
Earl, actually, do you know what? When I introduced you, I didn't say, founder of, CEO of.
I'm from Newfoundland.
I'm settling into the rhythm of this as a project, because that was the perfect way to introduce you, was to not say your titles.
Absolutely appreciate that. It's not who I am. It's what I've done.
Yeah. Okay. I'm also a reader of encyclopedias, by the way.
Oh, cool.
There were some in the house, and I just, yeah.
Yeah, that was my big life gift.
Yeah, that's the one that stuck in my head. Big time. Yeah. I think that was a really wonderful gift.
Well, we need a special note for Brother Griffin to not let me go into the Christian Brothers as well. So,
no, totally. I mean, just imagine if you'd gone up to one of the other ones.
Don't
that little
imagine.
Bit of serendipity.
Yeah, yeah. I have like 15 comments that I'm going to take a pass on.
But maybe we'd be having a different conversation now. We'd be talking about your collection of paddles for correcting the issues with young Catholic boys.
Believe you me, I met that paddle more than once.
Yeah, I'm slightly younger than you, not much. I came in at the tail end of the corporal punishment in school. It's good. Good times. Fuck.
Yeah.
People talk about kids being soft now, but do you know what? Do I want my kids to be beaten at school? Not really.
No.
Quite like them to go there and enjoy themselves.
Yep.
Fuck it. Have a laugh, kids, because honestly, there's plenty of time for serious shit.
Yeah. Yep.
Anyway, Earl, thank you very much for joining us and for your candid takes on our bonkers list. We appreciate your company. Thank you.
It's a wonderful day. Thank you so much. I appreciate this a lot.